We're still trying to work through, good morning Lomi, trying to work through our morning procedure. And we're now coming to my most favorite bracha, which unfortunately is really unappreciated and misunderstood, I think, as well to some degree. And it is the bracha we make after going to the bathroom, referred to as the Asher Yatzar bracha. Yes, Chloe.
You know the posters that they put outside of the bathroom?
The posters outside the bathroom, yes.
But there's a line that's in parentheses. Are you supposed to say that?
It depends your nusach. There are different versions, slight differences in the version. We'll be looking at the Ashkenazic one today, and I shall tell you the Sephardic parentheses, and the parentheses are probably what you should be saying, if you're looking at an Ashkenazic one. So I shall give you both versions. Okay?
Okay.
And we'll see a slight difference between them. Yes, Hannah?
I was giving you a thumbs up.
Oh, good. Okay. So let's have a look at this beautiful tefillah. First of all, usually we say a bracha before we do an act. Before we eat the apple, we make a bari priha eitz. Before we eat a banana, we make a bari priha dhamma. Suddenly over here, we reverse it. First of all, we go to the bathroom, and then we make the bracha. What's up with that? Why would that be? Why do we go to the bathroom first, and then make the bracha? I'd like to hazard a guess. And by the way, these are your sheets. You can take notes on them, or put notes on your leg of the pads. Yes. Because what? Okay, you can still, though, bless God before you do it. But keep going. So number one is, maybe you try to go to the bathroom and nothing happened. Right? And then you make a bracha levatala, I guess. Right? So it's not going to work that way. And the other reason would be?
Well, if you're supposed to say a bracha right before you do something and you'd be in the bathroom, so why would you say a bracha?
Okay, you may be in the bathroom, but you make a bracha, but you can make the bracha before and then go into the bathroom. You can do that. Because what you're going to do is afterwards is go to the bathroom and then walk out of the bathroom anyway. Okay? Yeah?
I honestly feel like you say with so much more kavana after.
Why?
Because you're so relieved.
Ah, beautiful. That's exactly the answer. The kavana that you have beforehand. What are you thinking about before you go to the bathroom? I want to go to the bathroom. That's what you say. You see? So, a person should really not make brachot when they're going to go to the bathroom. Okay. Although we do make a difference between going to the bathroom for number ones and number twos, a person shouldn't even pray. Actually, the Rambam says in Hilchot Deot, the Lord, this is in the Mishnah Torah, that actually most diseases come upon people, he says, because they hold in when they need to go to the bathroom. And he makes a big, long elaboration. He spends time, and this is the Mishnah Torah, by the way. In the Mishnah Torah itself, the same Mishnah Torah that discusses the laws of Yom Kippur, the laws of Tefillin, the laws of Kosher, he says that it's a mitzvah to check whether you need to go to the bathroom 10 times a day. Then you have to go 10 times a day, but check 10 times a day. And that is when you wake up, before you exercise, after you exercise, before you eat, after you eat a few times, before you go to sleep, all the different occasions you made a check. And he says, if people were really careful not to hold in going to the bathroom, a lot of maladies and sicknesses will be relieved from humanity. That is the Rambam. And he actually talks about different forms and how to do it, and he goes into a lot of graphic detail, which I'm not going to do because it is 9:25 in the morning and you're eating breakfast, some of you. So I'm not going to go into the graphic details, but he actually talks about the way it actually comes out is actually a sign of health and not health, you know, which may have been lost a little bit from our people. But it's something which we take very, very seriously. Yes?
It's an off topic, but do you only fulfill a mitzvah if you acknowledge that you're doing it?
That is a very good question, which is discussed extensively in the Gemara, and that is mitzvah sricha kavana. Does a mitzvah need kavana, intention, in order to get the... And there's a long discussion, backwards and forwards, right through the Rishonim. And the final answer, I believe, is if it could be interpreted as you doing it for another reason, then maybe not. But if it can only be for the reason of doing a mitzvah, like for non-personal to fill in, right, for their health, says all of these doing it for the mitzvah. So if that mitzvah, you may not need a kavanah. But on other mitzvot, where it's not so clear that you're doing it for the mitzvah, maybe for an ulterior motive, then you would actually need to have kavanah when you actually do the mitzvah. Okay? So let's have a look at this prayer itself. So now a person has, Baruch Hashem, gone to the bathroom. Let's go inside it. And this is just over here, after Mithilat Yadayim, halfway down. And let us see this beautiful, powerful bracha, and let's learn some of the laws that are involved in it. Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. Blessed you Hashem, Lord King of the Universe. Asher Yetzar Et HaDam B'Chachma. What do those words mean? Let's break it down. Once in your life, let's break down this bracha and try to get some juice out of it. And you can help me here as well. Yetzar. What is Yetzar? Yetzira. Formed. More like formed, yeah? Hashem formed mankind with wisdom. What does that mean? Yeah, Hashem is wise. We're like complimenting Hashem.
Oh, how is that relevant to this?
To what?
Like to say, like,
what does
this have to do with, like,
what is that? That's what we're going to see as well. Very, very good. Let's have a look at the bracha, and let's sort of see why, specifically, we try to figure out why it would be that it says specifically over here. Okay, I may not have a clear answer, but it's worth thinking about. But let's just look at the bracha itself, and then we'll try to apply it. So Hashem created mankind with chokhmah. Does that mean Hashem was smart? Hashem is chokhmah? What do you think it's saying over here? Let's think a little bit. Sorry to make you think. I apologize about that, but... Yeah? Melissa, what's in your mind? Yetzar atam b'chachma. Hashem creates mankind with chachma. Whose wisdom is it? Okay, so there's another... Right, so one is that Hashem gave us the power of wisdom. You could say that. Yeah? Yeah, go on. Okay, very good. So number one is Hashem gave us wisdom. He made us have the ability to think, which is going to be important about the rest of the bracha, obviously. So probably a good introduction for the rest of the bracha, the rest of the blessing. And number two, the human body is an incredible machine. Now, I used to have a rabbi when I was a kid in yeshiva who would constantly talk about this. This was his big thing. And it always come in with the amazing human body, how it is just incredibly designed and how every part of it works together. And he would say that you could take a million computers, it couldn't figure out the brain and all these things. And these are things you've heard before, it's worth hearing again. But not only has man got tremendous wisdom, the ability to have wisdom, but we also are made with a body that is just unbelievable. That's an incredible body. And it works together, these little eyeballs can see things, you're able to touch things, lift things up, and move around. Right? That is something that is worth thinking about. And that itself, by the way, is one of the sources of emunah in Hashem. Right? The fact that we have this incredible body that does so many amazing things. Then the bracha is going to give us an example of the amazingness of the body. And what is that? Uvaravo nekavim nekavim. What's nikavim? Okay, so nikavim, right, comes the word nekev, which means an opening. Okay? And the next two words are chalulim, chalulim. What's a chalal? What's a chalal? A space. What's it referring to over here? So a chalal is an internal space. So a nekev are external holes, whether it be the nostrils, or the mouth, or the ears, or the eyes, or any other orifices we have. And the chalalim are the internal. Why does it have to say it twice? What is that? So great, God had to say it twice. Why nikavim, nikavim? What happens when you repeat something in Torah or in Jewish thought? What are we saying about it? Corey, darling? No, it just says nekavim, nekavim. It says it twice.
Sorry, I put it up. This is especially important.
What?
This is especially important.
It's important. What else could we be saying? I don't think so. When you repeat something, what are you saying? There are
more than one.
Well, nikavim is more than one. Nikavim means there are lots and lots of them. That's what I think. Right? Nikavim. Not just like a couple. Right? And chalolim. We are covered with millions and billions of these little holes all over us. Inside, outside, our skin breathes. We have follicles. We've got a lot of things going on with our body. Right? You'll see this many times, by the way. Many times the Torah refer to things in a double lashon. Okay, we call kefal lashon, for example. And it will say, you know, how do you say green in Hebrew?
Yarok.
Right? How do you say very green? Yarukruk.
Really?
Yeah, in the Torah. How do you say red in Hebrew? Adom. So when it says adom dam, it means very, very red. Right? And this comes from the Torah, and they try to get various colors for the Kohanim, how to identify various colors. So many times we'll repeat words, and it says very, very much. So nikavim is like not just one or two. Well, we've got loads of them. And chalolim, wow. We've got so many of these holes running right through us. Then it says something which is difficult to understand. We'll read it anyway. Galuya viadua. It is, what's galui? Revealed. Viadua and known. What's known? Lifnei chisei chavodecha. Where's that? The chisei chavodecha. Your holy throne. Hashem, as it were, the same metaphor, sits on a very, very holy throne in Shemayim, the throne of glory. And there's a secret that is known and revealed even there, that what? We are very dependent on all these tubes that lead all through our bodies and through our hearts. She'im yipatech echad mehem, that if you were to open one of them, which is usually closed, or yisatem echad mehem, or you close one that is usually opened, ifshar lehit kayem, it would be impossible to survive. V'la'amod lefanecha, and here's some sfarim, say, afilu shachat, even for a second, even for a moment. Right? The intricacy of all the different tubes and pipes inside us, we wouldn't even be able to survive for even a moment. Baruch atah Hashem, and here's the big finish, rofe chol basar, you heal all flesh, umafli lasot, and you do incredible things. Absolutely amazing. Says Rav Moshe Isserles, the Rama, who was a rabbi who lived in Krakow, Poland, the same time as the Rav Yosef Karo. He actually wrote a commentary on his halachic sefer. He says, what is this mafli lasot that the bracha, that the blessing, is speaking about? What is this incredible wonder? And he says in his commentary, when I read it, that we are made up of two opposites. We have a body, and we have a soul. Actually, as I told you before, we are a soul, and we have a body. It's the other way around, right? We are, in essence, neshamas, and we're given bodies in order to fulfill things in this world. And this is the fact that these two completely different things, which are, I mean, there is no bigger difference anywhere in creation where you see two more different things having to coexist with each other than the body and the neshama. There is nothing is more different than that. And the fact that these two come together, according to him, is the amazingness of humanity. And that's the mafli, it's a pella. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable that this comes together. And if you think about it, We have this neshama that's inside us that keeps us alive, and we're covered in holes, and the right holes work fantastically for us. They allow us to breathe, yeah, and to hear, and to go to the bathroom. And if you think of us as balloons, we don't pop. We're still able to keep all the bits inside us. They don't, like, start leaking out, right? Everything is controlled beautifully. Everything flows perfectly. And unfortunately, we only get to realize that when things are not working so well. Okay? So that, he says, is the amazingness of the human body. So back to Corey's question. Why do you think this blessing was attached to going to the bathroom? So basically, in your life, if you say this every time, and by the way, whenever you go to the bathroom, even if a small amount comes out, you wash your hands, you make this bracha. Okay? And according to the rabbis, this is a very, very special and holy blessing. According to the Chafetz Chaim, people who say this bracha have a certain guarantee of good health. Now, we see people who get sick who do say this bracha, so we have to understand what he means. But it comes with a tremendous schut, merit, and it's a very, very powerful and important bracha. You know, and how long does it take to say? I mean, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds? You go to the bathroom, I don't know, 5, 6 times a day, I don't know. What's that, a minute of your life, a minute of your day? You're stopping and contemplating the amazingness of Hashem. According to Sephardic halacha, you should try to say this bracha, according to the Ben Ish Chai, 30 minutes after going to the bathroom. According to other poskim, 72 minutes after going to the bathroom. According to the Ashkenazim, you have until the next time you need to go to the bathroom. And then you can't say a bracha because you have to go to the bathroom. So then you go to the bathroom and you have in mind both times you've gone to the bathroom and covered by the same bracha. So that is the way we make that bracha. Yeah.
Isn't it best to do it right after you come out of the bathroom? No?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. That is the best time. You have. I'm just saying, if a person forgot or something, I'll tell you what I did. Every year, people try to take on various things on Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur. It's a thing. So I try sometimes to take on certain things. So I decided this bracha, I was learning about this bracha, and the commentators, how amazing it is, how important it is. So I decided to say this bracha whilst, this was my New Year's resolution, basically. My Jewish New Year's resolution. To say this bracha whilst standing still. That was my New Year's resolution. You may think, that's not much of a resolution, because basically you're agreeing to stand still for a minute a day. But that is the key to making resolutions. You make very, very, very small ones. If you want to do more, that's fine. But your resolution is a very small one. That, say many of the rabbis, is the way to make a resolution. Not the, I will never eat chocolate ever again. That doesn't work. I will no longer eat burgers or not going to work. Okay? So I just made a resolution. So I mentioned now, because the resolution happens to involve this bracha. So I say this bracha, I try to, standing still. Extremely difficult. But it makes it a lot more impactful. You actually stop and think about the fact that your body is working well. And that is a tremendous gratitude to Hashem. Yeah?
I always rush when they say
it. Do you know what? Just saying it itself is good. Yes, Lee?
The way that I say it is profile, like in any other cases where, like, giving birth.
I know you would have thought, right? No, we don't. There are other brachot. A woman says after giving birth, and a man says after his wife gives birth. But this is exclusively done for after going to the bathroom. Any thoughts on that? I'm not too sure, actually. I should look into it. Any thoughts on specifically going to the bathroom? So I once thought that maybe, because going to the bathroom is like the end of a process, right? It started at one end and ended at the other, right? Let's be perfectly honest about it. So maybe we can say, I'm sure someone says this, that you're kind of like recognizing the fact that it went to the mouth, that it, the food or the liquid, and it replenished you, and it had to go through a whole series of tracks and pipes and tubings, which could have been, I don't know, hundreds of miles, you know, that's all wrapped up inside you. And this is the end of the process. So you're thanking Hashem after this. So this now represents, going to the bathroom, represents the end of the amazing traveling experience of this food through your body, releasing the nutrients, removing the waste, the bits you don't need, and holding the bits you do need. It's an amazing process. Maybe this is the end of it. I once thought that. I'll take some more ideas.
It's so commonplace, so really. You go to the bathroom however many times a day. It's so commonplace.
Yeah. There's another
technique.
That's a whole process. That you're grateful for anyway, right? I hear what you're saying. Yes, it is a whole big thing. Oh, yes. I will say to you that this is a problem with many mitzvot in general and many forms of prayer. And this is something which the rabbis speak about at great length. And that is the mitzvot of people are melumada. They come by habit. Right? So when a person first starts saying this bracha, or anything other mitzvah, first time you put a tefillin if you're a boy, or first time you start lighting candles, whatever it is, you get excited, and then eventually it wears down. I'll give you a technique which the rabbis tell us, and it works. No doubt it works. If you get bored or you get uninspired by doing a certain mitzvah, learn the laws about it. When you learn about that particular mitzvah, you actually regain that original desire for it. It works. So, for example, if you feel I'm lighting candles, I don't really feel it, every week, same thing, same candles. If you learn about a hilchot, hadlakat nerot, and you learn the laws of them, actually, it makes it exciting again. It really works, you know? And sometimes it'll just happen subconsciously, or I'll read the Torah mentioned to fill in, and the next time I put it to fill in, it's like, oh, you know, I know what I'm doing here a little bit, you know? So actually, when I'll hear a halacha, an idea, I read something, and it just happens to be there, even like one line, it's like, oh, that's what I'm putting out to fill in. Because you're going to go through life and do many, many things and not even like, think about it. And this applies to everything in life, by the way. Everything in life. Right? When it comes to you know, bringing up kids, it can be very, very difficult, very challenging. Very, very challenging. So people read books on child rearing. There's a lot of good Jewish books out there. You know, wonderful guides. I went with my wife, you know, we were blocked with many kids, and went to a class by a rabbi. That was organized by friends about child rearing, you know, the Jewish way, Torah way, different ideas, thoughts. And I didn't lose it with my kids for a 24-hour period. That's a great, you know, it was worth it just for that. You know? You'll understand one day. You're still in the child trauma trans crazy mode, but you're going to actually flip over, God willing, into the child mode. Okay, so there's different opinions. This is an Ashkenazic version of Siddur. The Sephardim jump, or don't jump actually, it's actually printed right afterwards. You see, it says at this point, some recite Elokai Neshama on page 18. Okay, so we're actually going to do that. So jump to page 18.
Oh,
and the reason, no, Ashkenazim separate the two. Sephardim, and maybe Nusach Sephard, of which we have no one here, which is mostly the Hasidim. By the way, you'll find that the Siddur of the Sephardi, Siddur, and Nusach Sfarad, which is what the Hasidim generally use, yeah, are very similar. And the reason we have the same Kaddish, the same Kedusha, the same Tachanun, very similar. The reason they both come from the Arizal, they say. So it was like a mixture of the two. So I believe the reason why Elokai Neshama is mentioned after the blessing over the, in the morning, I'm saying, obviously, is because it has no opening bracha. It only has an ending bracha. So we want to attach it to another bracha, which is a Hashem Yatzar, which starts with, so you start with one bracha, and you end with another, so you sandwich them together. I believe that is the reason. So let's have a look at this bracha. This is actually quite unusual, this one. Because it has an interesting beginning, and I'm going to pose a question one of my teachers asked on this many years ago. It says, Elokai, God, Neshama Shenatata Bi Tohorahi. This Neshama, this soul that you gave me is pure. Okay? We have a pure soul. It is not sullied. We are not, heaven forbid, born into sin. It is pure. Other religions will say, no, the soul is born with various problems and various... This is not true. Judaism sees the neshama as a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Hashem, and it is pure in nature. I have a question, and I don't know the answer. And I've posed questions to many people. I like this question, although I do not know the answer. Who's speaking over here?
Yeah.
Who's you?
Like me. I'm saying.
You're saying what?
I'm saying God has placed your soul in me. I'm saying that.
But how can you say that? Which part of you saying it?
I don't know. I wasn't that. He's talking.
So the neshama is talking. Yeah. But how can the neshama thank God for putting a neshama inside me? Do you get it?
Yeah, but are you like that?
You put a neshama inside me, but. Well, the soul manifests itself in the brain as well.
Really?
Yeah, to some degree. It's spread out, they say. Different parts in the blood, different parts in the heart. Do you get the question?
Yeah.
It's a difficult question, right? Who's talking over here? Is the soul talking? It's not going to be talking because it's saying, actually, you gave me a soul. It's going to be the soul talking. So the body's talking?
No, but like it's all connected.
What do you mean by that? So why are you saying thank you for putting the soul inside me?
Your soul is
looking on behalf of your body. It's like a representative. I guess that's the only answer I could ever think of. Right, that's an interesting question, no? Okay. Okay, so let's have a look. So now we start with the body, and now we move on to the neshama. Hashem, you gave me a pure soul. The soul is good. We do aveirot. We sully it. But we have to remember. Now, by the way, where's the soul been up to now? Where are you when you say this? What time of day is it? It's the morning, right? It's the morning. So, you've just woken up. Where's the soul been? You just received it. Where was it? In Shemayim. Every night, say the rabbis, the soul goes up. We said that sleep is the 60th of death, right? It's shishim. It's the 60th of mavet, of death. And therefore, the soul goes up to Shemayim. It actually testifies to the actions of the body in Shemayim every night. And then it comes down back into the body. And that's why you have to do the hand washing, because there's tumah, it comes in, it leaves, and you have to wash your hands. Thought. I had a question on this. One second. Why does Hashem make us sleep? Is that a fair question? Have I discussed that before?
No.
Why would Hashem create something called sleep? Why do we spend so much of our life, and if you're a Stern here at Stern College, such a vast amount of your life, like any good college students, asleep? Why would Hashem make us and then make us spend, what's working out, what? 24 hours a day, so 8 hours, so like a third of your day, which means a third of your life, is spent paralyzed. Bella, not in my class. You can't sleep in my class. You can only sleep in bed. Why would that be? Ever thought about that? Why would Hashem create something called sleep? What's the point of that? What does it do? Why can't we just like be awake the entire time? Like in a, you know, a caffeine-infused madness. Like no sleep ever. I get so much more done. I could do so much more. I could post so much more statuses on Facebook. I could tweet so much more. I could, you know, procrastinate. I could spend time. But why? Hashem could have made us, Hannah, not needing to have menucha. Hashem designed us this way. Not by coincidence that the body was created, that it needs to sleep. Is that a fair? I think it's a fair question. It's not my question. It was asked by greater people than myself. Any thoughts on that? It's worth thinking about once in your life. Why did I show me this thing called sleep? Besides wanting to like fall asleep, you know, during class, you know, how else can you show a teacher that you're like really not interested? So I tell a funny story actually. I did a Shabbaton many years ago for Oh no, it wasn't NCSY. It was actually for your community and someone you know actually. So I did the Shabbaton many years ago, and I spoke Friday night. And it was late, but I get very, very funny, you know, lively talks. Friday night, young kids, you know. So I'm giving this talk, and there's a guy sitting up front. And as I open my mouth, he falls asleep. As I start talking, he's like, a zoid. And I do the whole talk, and no matter how loud I am, no matter how animated, he's out cold. Totally out cold. I finish the talk, everyone starts clapping, he snaps up. He's like, whoa, what's going on, what's going on? So, you know, after the talk, people come up to me, or they'll thank me, or they ask me a question. So I see there's like a line of people to come, schmooze a little bit, talk a little bit, and he's in the line. I'm like, what is this guy going to say? He was out cold for the entire thing. It's a true story. So he walks over. I'm waiting around thinking, what's he going to say? What's he going to say? He's going to apologize maybe or something. He comes up to me. He grabs my hand firmly, shakes my hand, and says, Rabbi, that was the most refreshing talk I ever heard. Most refreshing talk I ever heard. Because he slept all the way through. He's all refreshed because... He's actually a good friend of mine.
He's a good friend of mine.
It's funny. It was a joke. It was a joke. You're the most refreshing talk I've ever had. So why do we sleep?
I think it's to rejuvenate your soul.
Okay, let's assume. But how and why?
Because your soul is going up to the
sun. Okay. So basically, that's a nice idea. I never thought of that. You're like redocking, right? Once a day, you redock. Your soul goes back up. And it comes down, and I don't really feel it. I just feel like I'm asleep. But I do feel something. I do feel something related to that. Yeah?
I think that, like, if you go to sleep, let's say, like, one day you're feeling something, and you go to sleep, like, the next morning, you have a different, like, view or, like...
Jessica, that is a beautiful answer. You know what Jessica is saying? It's an amazing thing. She's saying, if we were awake the entire time and our life was one long day and you made a mistake, which we all do, you couldn't get over it because it just happened. There's no division of time. So Hashem created day and night and let us, like, pass out and every day starts anew. We're given an opportunity every morning. Like, that was yesterday. Yesterday I did X and Y, but today I'm a new Bria. I'm a new creation. I get to be reborn every single day. So I can't get depressed about what I did. Because that was yesterday. That was me yesterday. I'm a new person. So Hashem gave us this amazing ability that we could wake up every morning and say, yesterday, lousy. But today, and if it wasn't like that, we'd have one long lousy life because the bad stuff would just completely permeate. And the other way around, we had a great day yesterday. And we can't turn around and say, oh, I'm so amazing. I'm like, today's a new day. I've got new stuff to do. But why sleep? So let me answer it this way. Unless we can think about it. And you can have your own answers as well, which you should do when you study Torah, by the way. And it goes like this. Maybe we can say that imagine you have, let's take someone from like one of the best positions in the world, an astronaut. Okay? Someone who people invest millions and millions of dollars in. And this person is the leading astronaut, and he's about to take this space shuttle up into space. And this object he's flying is worth millions, if not billions of dollars. Right? There's like thousands of people involved in making this person go up. And so he goes into his space shuttle, and he goes up, and he has the most amazing mission. It goes incredibly well. And he comes back down, and there are thousands and thousands, not millions of people who now see this person as such an incredible individual. You've achieved the most amazing thing. How does that person feel?
Special.
He feels amazing. He's conquered space. He's conquered the moon. Or he's the president of America with tremendous power to do whatever he wants. And every single person in this entire world has the same thing. From the lowest person to the astronauts and the presidents. And what's that? They're paralyzed for a third of their life. No matter how special he is, he still can't control it. He's got to lie down and he's got to be unconscious for 6, 7, 8 hours. Isn't that incredible? Never thought about it that way, did you? He's got to be unconscious for 6, 7, 8 hours, no matter what he does, no matter how powerful, no matter how much money. What does that do to a person? It humbles them. It gives them humility. It humbles us. You can have billions of people love and adore you. You got to lie down. You can be the most powerful person. We all go to the bathroom. Same thing. You know that Paro was spoken to by Moshe Rabbeinu in the morning. He would say, Moshe Rabbeinu used to wake up early and he would get into the Nile, and Paro's in the Nile. So Rashi is quizzed by that. Why would he have to go early in the morning? Go in the afternoon. So what was he doing in the Nile? He's going to the bathroom. Why would he just go then, every morning at that time? And Rashi was an incredible answer. Because Paro was making himself out into a god. And gods don't go to the bathroom. So you'd have to go to the bathroom when? When no one else was around. Very early in the morning. And do it in the Nile. When did Moshe Rabbeinu speak to him? When did Hashem tell Moshe Rabbeinu to speak to him? Punk right then. That's time to go to him. Show him that he's not a god, he's a man. No matter how powerful, how rich, we all walk around with refuse inside us. It's got to come out. Pretty demeaning, just like an animal. That's the body. And we all need sleep. We all spend a major chunk of our life paralyzed. And that humbles us. It's a very humbling thing. You never thought of it that way, did you? 7 hours of your day, you're paralyzed. Great question. What's the point of dreams? So I'll give you an incredible answer to that. I'll give you an incredible answer to that, which could change the way you look at the world. What are dreams? Dreams are either recollections or whatever that we go through at nighttime, which are good for us, by the way. The Hebrew word for a dream is chalom, and that's related to the word hachlama, which is a cure, right? A healing. So they're good for us, the Gemara says. The Gemara spends a lot of time discussing dreams, by the way. Actually, all of Jewish history is based upon dreams. You realize that. If you looked at the Torah, right? It was dreams of Yosef, it was dreams of Yaakov before him, right? It was Paro's having dreams, everyone's having dreams over there, you see? And these dreams actually made us as a people. But why do they exist? So check this amazing idea out. Dreams, when you're dreaming, what do you think? That it's real. You think it's real. And for some people, that's great news when they wake up because it was a terrible dream. And for some people, they're like, oh, what a shame. What a great dream. Right? I wish that wasn't. Yeah. We have this amazing like feeling, euphoria. But one thing is for sure, when we have dreams, it's real to us. And then what happens? We wake up. Our souls are in this world, and Dovra Melech tells us they're going to look back, and he says, Hayinu kecholmim. When we move to the next world, we will be like dreamers. What does that mean? So he actually means that it will feel as though we're waking up. In other words, how do you know you're awake right now? And the answer is, you don't know. And you're like, because I know I'm awake. I know this is not a dream. Excuse me, last night you were asleep and you thought you weren't in a dream either. You thought it was real as well. So what Hashem did was an amazing, incredible thing. Hashem created a system of a system. Meaning, how do we know this is the real world? You could think this is everything. This is the world. That's it. When we die, that's the end of it. Hashem was like, but you thought that last night. So Hashem put a metaphor inside the metaphor. He put a dream inside this world. And we spend a lot of our time dreaming. So if someone says, this is real, they could say, last night I thought it was real as well. This is not the real world. Eventually you will wake up and go to where the neshama goes to. And they see it's a feeling of waking up. So this entire existence is one big, long dream. Right.
And one of my rabbis like said, like, it's like, have you ever watched The Matrix? It's like that. Like, we're in a different world. Like, we just have to live.
That's really how this world is. This actually, if you want to read more of it, it was actually one of my great teachers. Rabbi Tatz talks about this. It's based on other chazals that I've seen. They talk about the metaphor of what a dream represents. So you think you're awake right now, but maybe you're not. How do you know? So maybe this world is just one long dream, and maybe you'll wake up again.
How freaky is that? It's so weird.
It's really weird.
You get the idea?
No.
I mean, that's really what this world is. This world is not real. It's this world is the physical world, and the real world is the neshama world. And we're putting this. How do you know? It's just a metaphor. Could be. That's a good question. It isn't completely. Leave your body. I don't think in a shama, because if the shama leaves the body is dead. We have these two opposites that are compressed and pushed in together. So it can't be completely leaving your body. We think of, I think one of the problems is we think of the soul as like an object.
Yeah.
Right? One body, says the Rambam, cannot be in two places at the same time. Right? But a shama can. Right? The neshama is not a physical thing. It's like, but it's one thing. It's encapsulated inside the body. And held inside the body, right? That's the kli, that's the vessel that contains it. But it is not the body. And they say it's like a drop of water. A drop of water hits the ground, little droplets will come off that one drop. Yeah. Okay, let's finish up. What time is it? Okay, let's finish up our bracha. So it says, Tahore, it's perfect, it's pure, it's part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's pure, it's good. And the neshama we get is a good neshama. Now we cover it up with, unfortunately, as my Rebbe used to say as a kid, with schmutz. And that means, schmutz. Okay, atavrata, atayisata, you created it, you formed it. Atanafachtabi, how we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu blew in the soul into Adam HaRishon, right, Ba'apav. So we know that Hashem blew the neshama into us, which means, by the way, your neshama is part of Hashem. Because let's say, in the example, the analogy that's given by the rabbis is, imagine a person who glass blowing, when they blow into the glass to blow it out. So the blower blows into it. But if you go inside that bottle, these forms, you go inside that, the air inside comes from the blower. It comes from the person who pushed the air inside from himself. That means there's a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in each and every one of us. That's the idea of it, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu blew life into us. Right? That metaphor is given specifically to reveal that that truth to us, right? Which is why, by the way, life, going to Judaism, is based upon breath. Yeah. Umashamra bekirbi, and it is guarded with inside me. You, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, keep it inside, right? All the time we're alive. Va'ata atid litlam meni. Eventually, at Hashem's reckoning, the soul is taken away. Ulachzira bi latad lavon. It speaks about resurrection of the dead. At some future time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will return that neshama to the body. To the body, calls man shanashim bekibi. You know what? All the time this neshama is inside me, I'm very, very grateful. By the way, does your neshama want to come to this world? No. It says in Pirkei Avot, al korkach ata notzar. Against your will, you're formed. Al korkach ata nolad. Against your will, you are born. Al korkach ata chai. Against your will, you live. Via korkach ata mit. Against your will, you die. And against your will, ata chayv l'ten din v'chejm l'fnei melech malchei ha-melochem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to give judgment for Hashem against our will as well. So there seems to be this thing that we don't want to come to this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu forms us and pushes us into this world. But once we're here, we want to stay. Right? So the same neshama that prefers not being swallowed because they're in the spiritual realm, having a great time, floating around, and suddenly it's pushed into this nasty, cold world which is fraught with difficulties and exams and dealing with trying to get married and all these horrible, horrible things. And the soul was so perfect, sitting there by the Kisei HaKavod with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and comes into this world. The only way that the soul can achieve greatness is coming into this world. Right, this world of the Olam HaMaaseh, of action, Olam HaSiyah. That's where it actually happens. So we don't want to come in, but once we're here, we don't want to leave. Right? So we're grateful, in fact, Hashem Elokai V'Lavatai, reborn comes to the master of all action, and the master of all souls, Blessed Hashem HaMachazir Neshamad Lefkarim Meitim, who restores souls to dead bodies. What does that mean? Who restores souls to dead bodies? So two possibilities. One is reference, once again, to Tchiyat HaMeitim, right, to future times when the soul of the body will be one day be rejoined, but also every morning. Every morning the soul is allowed to re-enter in totality into the body and to reinvigorate. Yes. Yes, but it may come back again and again. That is another topic called Gilgul Neshamot, which we're to speak about another time. We shall stop over there. Shabbat Shalom, and we'll pick this up, God willing, next week.
This world is known as like the opaque world.
Olam Asiya, the world of action, as Hans refers to, yeah. The world of action and doing.